Dell PCs with Intel inside are built for the moments you plan. And the ones you don't. For the time you forgot your charger at the gate.
Passengers, we are now on our initial ascent.
Or when you're bouncing between projects like a ping pong ball. We build PCs with long-lasting battery life so you're not scrambling for a charger. And built-in intelligence so you can stay focused on whatever you're doing. Dell Technologies. Built for you. Dell.co.uk/Dell PCs.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews all on the app. Download today.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding. I really think that everyone should try being in a band at least once. The most fun I've ever had has been playing in them. I had my high school jam band phase, then college indie rock, then post-college Americana. Even this podcast is kind of a band. We just talk instead of play. I'm not alone in thinking that bands are important. I was recently reading a piece in Time called In Defense of the Band, which makes this case that a band is a salve for our hyper-individualized, hyper-commodified world. It's a real opportunity to make a connection. It was written by Katie Gavin of the band Muna, which is Katie, Josette Maskin, and Naomi McPherson. They're one of my absolute favorite bands right now. I wanted to talk with them because I wanted to hear from all of them why being in a band matters, and I also wanted to hear about their recent album, Dancing on the Wall. Got this big 80s over-the-top production. On the surface, it's an infectious pop record. Underneath, the lyrics draw on the collective, activism, mutual aid, the fights against climate change and war. But really, it's about how we can be our best together. Here's my conversation with Muna. Joe, Katie, Naomi, thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
My first thing is I'm just wondering how we do this, because this is only my second time interviewing three people, which I did that a long time ago.
Sure.
And I'm just curious, what is the most effective way to make this great for all of you as a collective?
I feel like it's vibes.
I mean, just vibe it out. You can direct questions at individual people if you'd like, and we can toss it around.
Sometimes it feels like an attack, and sometimes it feels good. Nice.
Okay. But I think we've gotten pretty good, because we, like, as a rule, don't do, like, individual interviews. Like, we always get interviewed together, so I think we've gotten pretty good at...
Yes, it was a good rule.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to trust that this is going to happen.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, I think we're good at allowing.
Well, I'm excited to see how that unfolds. Yeah. Okay, I want to start with, last night I was really enjoying a conversation that you had with the songwriter Justin Tranter. He's been on the Switch on Pop a couple times.
Yeesh.
His podcast, Unfamous, really great.
Absolutely.
And Katie, you said, it's so crazy to me that most people aren't in bands.
Yeah.
And I would love for you to elaborate what it is to be in a band and why you wish it upon others. And then let's open it up, because I kind of want all your perspective on this.
Well, I think that I have, like, life partners, and I have these people who, like, intimately know what my experience of my life has been, you know, like, we're sharing this really crazy ride together. And I think it's a combination of, like, a best friendship, a marriage, and, like, a family. It's, like, a really, really close, insane, demanding connection. I think all three of us are very obsessed with meaning and purpose in life. And I think that these relationships, like, they ground our lives and they give us so much purpose.
So let's open it up. How are we feeling about being in a band?
How are we feeling about being in a... Naomi, how do you feel?
I think, I mean, Katie summed it up pretty succinctly and aptly. But yeah, I think for us, we exist as sort of this protective unit and space in which we are able to incubate our ideas and our creative vision and stuff. And I think we are in a culture that prioritizes individuals, individuality. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, we live in an intensely brand-focused neoliberal society. Mm-hmm. And I think that leads to the prioritization of like easily consumable singular individual identities, which is why I think we have so many pop stars and so few bands.
Yeah.
Or at least there are so many bands, but they're not getting attention. And yeah, I think we're just fortunate that we like got in at the very last second, you know, in the 2010s, and that we're able to do this with our lives. I just think doing it by myself, or I'm sure y'all would feel the same way too, it just would be really, really hard. Mm-hmm. So we're fortunate in that sense to have each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a few things. I like to collaborate. Like my favorite act in music is collaboration. Like I think I enjoy bouncing off of other people and like trying to figure out something that is better than anything I could do like by myself. And also I'm like, I could never exist in a public facing role by myself, absolutely ever. Like I don't know how people do it. It keeps us sane, it keeps us grounded, like it also just like gives us a purpose that is like so much more than anything that like is driven purely like by ego. I think that is the most like useful thing about like being in a band, because it creates an identity that is outside of yourself, you know? And I think that's always been part of like Muna's kind of vibe, if that makes any sense. Yeah.
Or like if we are having success, it doesn't feel like it's like me, the person,
like,
is the having
best.
Success.
Yeah.
It feels like this like idea that is a collective idea between the three of us, and also shared with the fans and the people who like our music. Like it feels like not just a win for me personally when something good happens for us. It feels like a kind of cool shared experience.
I love this. Yeah, it's a little personal. I'm restarting a band, getting back together with my old college collaborator 2 decades ago.
That's so cool. Cool.
We had been in different cities forever, so we started writing again. So maybe some of this, I'm also curious about some of the things that I can learn about how to be in an effective collaboration. I think there's probably no better way than demonstrating our collaboration than talking about your new music. You have this album, Dancing on the Wall. Mm-hmm. I want to start from the top. Get So Hot. It begins in a state, I feel like, of disorientation, where we're in the summer heat in LA, sun beating down on concrete, no palm trees to block out the sun.
Sun beats down on the concrete, it beats so hard, not even a palm tree. A house that living doesn't have AC, it gets so hot. So
it's a dance song, but at the very beginning, we can't even identify a downbeat, so we're like kind of lost.
Know. Yeah.
Eventually, four to the floor drum beat comes in.
Sun beats down.
And it's kind of just like this repeated refrain. It makes me think of like a Donna Summer kind of song. It's not like first chorus.
No,
it's, like, it's a pure dance song. Mm-hmm. Could we use this as an example of just how did this happen as a collaboration? And how did you decide to put this out first as the thing that we first hear?
This is arguably like one of the most sort of like, in the way that people might stereotypically think of like band collaboration, this is kind of the closest to that on this record.
Yeah, okay,
in the sense that like we were in Nashville with Daniel Toshin, who's an amazing songwriter who works with Casey Musgraves and a ton of other people. And he really just has such an awesome vibe.
He's like, so cute.
He knows when to like step in and say something, or to just like let you cook and be like a vibe curator and just create the space within which the music happens. But in this particular instance, he had been on a vacation with his family, and he had this little like Game Boy looking ass, like essentially portable DAW like machine. And he made this little synth loop, and he was like, I'm just gonna play you guys some stuff. And then there was like a loop that was sort of it is this. I mean, we've like edited the sounds.
Baseline. Yeah.
But
the
bass line, the lead synth, I ended up like programming it on another synth. But yeah, we took this beat from him, cut it up, made the form that it has, and we were just like looping it. And it was like stream of consciousness lyrics.
But it was your idea to be like, it's something like it gets so hot.
Yeah, we went to barbecue and it was really hot outside.
Yeah, in the morning, it's just one of those things that happens. I mean, it's been happening in LA and New York the past couple of weeks. We're in May now, so the seasons are changing. But it's a pure dance song, but it's disorienting. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head. There is something sort of unsettling and unsettled about the heat. It is like it penetrates the song and creates this sort of like dizzying, disorienting mirage on the top of a hill kind of like
it feels
sense.
Hazy.
Yeah. I have a really specific feeling when it's getting super hot in LA. In my 20s a lot, it actually like kind of induced like this kind of mania where it was like all of a sudden I would be staying up a lot later, like not even necessarily going out, but like in my bedroom, I'd be like, I want to like smoke cigarettes. Like I just like go, I want to go like demon mode a little bit. And also when I first moved to LA and we were at USC, like that kind of burdensome sun on these like endless stretches of concrete in like food deserts, there's like a feeling of like, I live in a dystopia. And so, therefore, I'm going to behave like a heathen. And I think that that was enough to work with for, like, to build this world of the song. And Naomi has said before that, like, that track on the album kind of serves as the, like, In Fair Verona of the record. Like, it's, like, it's setting the scene of, like, this is where we are playing out this drama.
I feel like it's really appropriate then maybe to go to the title track, which comes right after that, Dancing on the Wall.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it is a big dance production, but something is wrong.
Yeah.
That's classic Muna.
Which is one of my favorite.
Something is not right.
If I'm not crying on the dance floor, something's not right.
Sure.
Yeah, that's kind of our specialty.
I don't know if it's supposed to be a 90-degree turn from Lionel Richie's Dancing on the Ceiling. I think you really established this pristine 80s pop production. Mm-hmm. I was wondering maybe, Joe, if you could start with how do you go about, in your collaboration, deciding on what the sound and the vibe of the thing is going to be?
I feel like a lot of it came as a post-reaction to our last record, where we kind of felt like Muna had to be as expansive as possible. This record, we really wanted to make a record that feels like everything is connected and it's in a time and space. And I mean, it was the first time that we actually like had a studio that was ours that we could like really tap into and focus on, like, this is what this record is. And I think just like the 80s of it all, it's kind of the music that we, I feel like, love the most, like in our core, and felt the most attracted to. And I mean, it's funny that I don't know if I feel the record is bright in a way, but I feel like
Right. It's like a lot of people do 80s things, but they just like put on a gated snare.
Yeah.
And they're
totally.
Like, oh, it's 80s. And there's like a Juno. And you're like, it's 80s. Like, no, the 80s is like really like almost blaringly bright.
Totally.
And you've got like slap bass. You've got like things that are in your face.
They're
unapologetic.
I think there's also like a political element.
You're affected by everything.
As well. Like, I think there is a reason the music of the Reagan Cold War era had this kind of shiny, metallic, futuristic, bright, but also like something's off feeling to it. And the you know, the anxiety about the future and like
100.
I think we all feel that now too. And it's it makes sense that there's like a natural sort of, at least for us, like there's a clear connection between our current reality as we experience it in this sort of conservative backlash with a lot of future anxiety and anxiety about the climate as sort of expressed in it Gets So Hot. And it makes sense on a sort of academic level to like go back to that place because it's still rich to pull from. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's so many parallels.
So there's a lot of vision that I'm hearing from y'all in that, like, you know, you wanted to make something that sounded consistent across the board. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you all are checking in on in your gut in the room, or are you whiteboarding?
And it's both.
There were a lot of songs that, like, we had a few different, like, sessions where we would, like, listen through everything. And also this had to do with the fact that, like, I had put out a solo record in between our third album and this album, and I was, like, going out on stints for tour and then, like, would come back, and we had to, like, a certain amount of time had passed and I had done, like, a certain amount of demos, and they had also worked on stuff when I was gone. So it was kind of like, we need to, like, keep doing these, like, States of the Union. Hmm. And, yeah, it started with, like, we had, like, A-list, B-list, C-list. And I think at a certain point, like, songs did get put on the chopping block because they were not cohesive enough with the rest of the album. Like, it would, like, count as a strike against them. I think we, like, were like, this is important enough to us to make something that is, like, sonically consistent. And then, you know, like, when it gets to the farther end of the process, then we had, like, a piece of paper on the wall that we, like, rolled out, and it had, like, the songs not in track, not in album, like, order, but it took us a long time to get there. And there were definitely, like, several conversations about, I think I felt like I had some moments of being like, this is really, really, really hard to meet the standards of, like, this record. And, like, we had some good conversations about, like, what I needed as the, like, main songwriter of the band. From, I needed a lot of positive reinforcement at different points to be like, don't give up. Like, you're doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And, like, we're going to get there. It's just that, you know, we're going to be tough on you because we know that you can do this. Mm. Yeah.
I think about, I don't know, like, the songwriter Dan Wilson has this amazing deck of cards that are, like, tools for effective songwriting and collaboration. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are, like, do the improv thing. Like, yes, and. Just, like, keep going.
Yeah.
What's really different about a long-term relationship is, like, you know each other on every level. You've probably had every kind of conversation. So I'm just curious, at this stage, when there is something that difficult that needs to be said, how do you approach that? You know, you were saying there is some vulnerability and needing some some support, but also needing to push at the same time. So how do you all approach that?
I think we have different tactics. Mm-hmm. I think I'm the most, I probably approach things with the least amount of tact. Like, I don't mean to be.
I don't think you have a choice. I think you just gotta.
Yeah, I think I will say there is an understanding between us that we are trying to make the best piece of work that we can. And so when things are said, even though it can feel personal, and I think we each have to work through that, like, personal, like, sting of if it, like, hurts, that there's an understanding that we are just trying to make the best art possible. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that when something is said, it doesn't hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And sometimes we have to work through the feeling part to get to the part that's about the work. And then we just try, like, no matter what. But I don't know, we each kind of go about it a different way. And I think we each have different needs, but it's also, it's just, like, so moment to moment.
True.
But it just does always come with the understanding we are trying to make the best art possible.
You're serving something larger.
Yeah. Always, always.
So it's like any long-term relationship where it's like, where we just have to continually see ourselves as a team and, like, know we're going to get through it, but, like, not be in denial about those tension points. It's a lot.
We can't have closeness without some conflict.
Yeah.
Learning to navigate it, I think, is always the sign of a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to target a production question to you, Naomi, about Dancing on the Wall.
Sure.
Though bright 80s sounds, mm-hmm. which are invoking this whole sort of political identity,
sure.
they're there, but there's also a whole lot of other contemporary things poking through.
Sure, yeah, totally.
Can you take me to the bridge?
Yeah, the halftime bridge.
Yeah.
This Muna record has probably more halftime moments than anything we've ever done. Yeah, the drums kind of switch up completely from
really
a sort
modern.
Of Lynn drum world to more kind of, process like 909 universe. The synths kind of warp and shift and glitch and the vocals kind of get sucked into this other, I don't know.
It's an awesome moment.
World, thank you. Yeah, we really were gunning for the halftime bridge kind of from the beginning. We were just like, this is a good idea and we should pursue it.
What does it do for you and for the song?
I think we're just not comfortable not having like some kind of little curveball moments here and there in songs. Not that they're like world shifting transitions or anything like that, but I do think the bridge is this more like anxious, introspective kind of like, yeah, looking at the clock, like as the seconds are ticking, and it, you know, it felt right to not have that just be like blasting through with the same beat. Like it didn't serve the story of the song. There's some, there's just a little like something about, yeah, wanting to pull the listener into this other kind of narrative reality that was just like an instinct thing that we did in the studio. Yeah, and there's also like crazy harpsichord stuff and like everyone needs to re-listen again, but there is harpsichord. It's crazy.
It almost does that thing of like, because it is a dance floor song, it's almost like the bridge is like the transition in between two other songs you experience on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, you like need a little chill out moment to yourself.
Totally.
That's the vibe that it gives me.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. It also is like, you know, in movies when like someone is like in a club and then the sound, you know, is kind of like getting more and more low passed.
Yeah.
And like as someone is becoming more like in their head.
Yeah.
Kind of that.
Totally.
Idea.
The place where you go internal in the party, even though you're surrounded by people.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's hard to not get cinematic with it. Like the songs, we're not synesthetes, but I do think there is an aspect of sort of like a visual thing. Like you want it to feel like how something would look if X, Y, and Z. And then try to figure out how to make the music get there.
Let's go to the next song. Let's go to East Side Girl. East Side Girls, take me to old time with East Side Girls, all stuck in the sublime East Side world. They want me on all fours, East Side Girls. I want to be your East Side Girl. Where you don't even miss your time. I did not know that you wrote a song for me. I did not know that I was an East Side Girl. But
it's for you.
It just brought me home because I lived in your collective neighborhoods for 10 years.
Oh,
and so
God.
Just like, I went to All Time a lot.
Totally.
Which is all very sweet. But you know, it's a song that has, I feel like, a lot of very specific place, very specific feeling.
Sure.
It's so joyous in describing the beautiful, dingy hellscape, which is the boulevard in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
How do you think about managing specificity versus universality in your work and who you're speaking to?
Honestly, it's like funny now that we're performing it, especially like, you know, we've just done a bunch of shows in New York, and it's like, it's not like it's a diss track to New York, but it,
no, we love
but
New York.
It is like, there's this funny line in it about like, she's leaving you for New York City. Like,
what a pity.
Eye roll. Sarah's leaving you for New York City. Such a pity that she never understood. It is funny. It's like, I don't think I really thought about it that much. I think there was an interest for us in, like, we've been in those neighborhoods for, yeah, like 10 years now. And we were interested in, like, capturing kind of a sense of the local. My approach to, like, organizing and political stuff, like, has become a lot more, like, localized, I think, out of a sense of, like, despair for affecting things. Like, on a global scale, it's become, like, either more like just like one-to-one like mutual aid relationships or like focusing on really local issues and like my community.
No.
And I think that kind of led to this interest in like, yeah, like having a song that for us is like, it's really cute because it's like, we had a friend who had a birthday party at Capri last week and like,
the
and this is a bar in Eagle Rock. And, like, we, like, basically have a song for her, you know?
It also feels kind of fun because it's, I think it's very accepted and commonplace for people to want to shit on LA for yes. some reasons that are maybe grounded in some truth and then some that are just like patently absurd. And so it felt, I don't know, it felt kind of like punk for us to like be like, no, we like it.
And hose down.
Yeah, we're holding it down. But I think it took on an added layer of meaning for us. We wrote it, or Katie brought the demo to us in maybe the summer of 2024, I think. And we started working on it. And we were instantly, once we got that, like, the chant, like, post-chorus moment, we were like, oh, we got it. It's the song finishes itself from here. We figured it out. And we had been working on it, and then at the beginning of 2025, the wildfires happened, and it added an emotional layer for us that wasn't there before, or colored it sort of differently.
Had a lot of friends displaced, a lot of burnt out homes.
Yeah, it was horrible.
But a lot of people being like, I'm like staying because this is my home, and I love this place.
Yeah, and people like, stepping up for each other in a way that I think goes against the stereotype about Los Angeles.
People don't know shit about LA.
They don't. They know about certain areas.
Which is great. You also wrote a song which is about a specific area.
And it's not even
their little home.
All time's not even in the East Side, but we won't even go
It was
there.
Just a behavior that we found was common in people as a first date suggestion.
It's on the right side of the river, I understand.
But the East Side is like, it's just like a feeling.
I mean,
I think the East Side
wrote...
is in New York. The East Side is in
LA.
You know what I mean? Like, you can be specific, but it's like everyone knows.
We're like celebrating
you know?
And lampooning like hipster.
Yeah, exactly. It's a song about fucking hipsters.
Yeah, it's Bushwick. It's, well, you know, it's Williamsburg back in, I don't even know now. You can even.
Yeah. 20 years ago.
Yeah, it does so much more than just joyous, poppy, infectious thing. One thing I wanted to start with was the sort of low baritone vocals that sound, they remind me, they're like East Side Girls. Like, they remind me of, like, Oh Yeah, or, like, Spin Me Right Round.
It's a
reference to, what is it a reference to? I can't remember the name.
I don't remember. Well, I remember.
Are you thinking of West End Girls?
Yes, but also the vocal thing is definitely, I mean, it's just like, it's not an 80s rip, but it's an 80s rip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I literally don't remember.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
The chant.
I'm laughing at you being like, it's a reference to.
I'm like, you guys usually, yes and.
I'm experiencing collaboration right now, which is like, Joe can't find it. We all can't find it.
I'm
too tired. We all can't find it.
One day we all will.
But it is, it's just like, it exists somewhere and someone will tell us what it is.
Yeah.
But.
Okay, but once again, we have to go to the bridge. This is one of my favorite bridges of all time. Berlin, haircut, safety pin, Detroit, Tokyo, all things astrological. Nashville, London, Negroni with the nice gin. Austin, Paris, fuck, she's non-monogamous. Roleplay, rent fair, gender confirmation care, house show, studio, roommate, drummer in control. Maybe some references here. It feels very I Didn't Start the Fire.
Totally.
It's this sort of like free association of so much about East Side community. Could you tell me about how this bridge happens?
Okay, so it started with me thinking about how at that point we were like, this might be a single on the record. So I was like, okay, I want to like have that moment, that like classic pop moment where you're naming different cities. I was like, we haven't done that shit. Like, let's do it. Because I think we wanted to have that idea of like the East Side exists like everywhere, whether you're on the East Side or not. It's just like a feeling. And I just started like free associating, like things that are to me like a part of the mood board. And it just went like queer, like haircuts, people with adjusting their outfits with safety pins or like wearing a safety pin in their ear. What's after that?
Detroit, Tokyo.
All things astrological. Like just when people are talking about astrology, you're probably on the East Side.
Or
all the lesbians I know are drinking like Negronis, or like they care about what kind of gin they're like drinking if they're drinking.
Call back to the fancy restaurant from earlier,
right. And then, fuck, she's non-monogamous is like, you know, just the experience of like all the like hot non-binary people that are non-monogamous on the East Side. It's like they're all the heartbreakers.
Props to rhyming Paris with non-monogamous, by the way.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You know, That's why they pay me the big bucks. And
the big bucks.
You want to like pick up the pace, right? So we drop the cities and we're starting to just like hit them with it every time. Role play, rent, fair, gender, confirmation, care. And then like the rest of it is kind of just a love letter to like our story of like our first shows that we played were like house shows. And then now we have our own studio and, you know, just like our time growing up and like what we've been through there. When we were making our second record, I lived in a house in Glendale with like five or six roommates, and it was just
that's the house that doesn't have AC.
Yeah, that was the house that doesn't have AC.
Jesus.
So that's roommate drama.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah. That's like that is a reality TV show in the making.
Yeah.
Five people, LA, everybody, no AC. What's
everybody would sleep like in the living room.
Katie lived
in
like
summer.
The attic. Yeah. Wow. It was crazy.
I loved it.
It was cool.
Yeah. And then Pick Me Up, Joyride album on the hard drive. 365. Yeah. Shout out Charlie XCX.
I feel like also production wise, we just didn't. I remember when we were doing it, this is just simple in a way. Yeah. Like, this is exactly what it is.
Well, but you guys
totally.
Like, we had
you didn't want the chords
I
to
didn't
be what
want
they were.
To go, they wanted to go to the six, like, and have this kind of like emotion. And I was like, I want it to be exactly what it is, like, straightforward.
On the one the whole time.
Yeah. I think we had already had an argument about like the Dancing on the Wall bridge. I was like, you guys are like just trying to make everything weird. You know what I mean? But they were completely right that like it needed the six to like give it a little bit of a emotional feeling of
six
like
is sad. The six is the A minor and C.
Yeah, yeah,
it
and just like that feeling of like I love us. You know, that's what it makes me feel when we're doing it live.
It makes it less sort of like, not that it's not kitsch, but
it is.
It makes it have a feeling.
It imbues it, with more emotionality, especially as we get into the parts that are more like, I guess, political, gender confirmation care. I mean, ridiculous that it's even a political notion, but and then the nostalgic as it sort of resolves like back into the chorus, which is very unlike us to have a song
resolve.
That is so in and around the one. Like
we don't like the one.
The one is too
really
rounded.
We don't like
what?
It's too safe. The one, we like the to one dip is into the one and then leave it.
But East
Side Girls is very insistent on the F.
So. Yeah. In a way that I feel like we actually haven't done in a funny way.
It's been a minute.
And in some ways, a lot of the decisions on that song, we were trying. I feel like in this album in general, we weren't afraid to do. Like, I feel like we've always felt the need to try to be different. But in this song, we were trying to do, like, this is what the song is. Mm-hmm. Let's do what the song is. And, like, playing, like, power chords or, like, playing, like, the simplest bass line, like, for what it was.
Yeah.
Is the decision that we wanted to make. Like, we were fine to embrace, like, older pop music that I feel like we at one point were like, this sucks, kind of.
Like,
I know
not
it sounds,
trying to obscure the
what
fact
it is.
That it is basic
or
something.
Yeah.
Like
100. And that's why we were at the one, you know?
Yeah.
Dell PCs with Intel Inside are built for the moments you plan and the ones you don't. For the time you forgot your charger at the gate.
Passengers, we are now on our initial ascent.
Or when you're bouncing between projects like a ping pong ball. We build PCs with long-lasting battery life so you're not scrambling for a charger. And built-in intelligence so you can stay focused on whatever you're doing. Dell Technologies. Built for you. Dell.co.uk/DellPCs.
Support for this show comes from Odoo. Running a business is hard enough, so why make it harder with a dozen different apps that don't talk to each other? Introducing Odoo. It's the only business software you'll ever need. It's an all-in-one, fully integrated platform that makes your work easier. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, and more. And the best part? Odoo replaces multiple expensive platforms for a fraction of the cost. That's why over thousands of businesses have made the switch. So why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's O-D-O-O.com. Support for this show comes from Odoo. Running a business is hard enough, so why make it harder with a dozen different apps that don't talk to each other? Introducing Odoo. It's the only business software you'll ever need. It's an all-in-one, fully integrated platform that makes your work easier. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, and more. And the best part? Odoo replaces multiple expensive platforms for a fraction of the cost. That's why over thousands of businesses have made the switch. So why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's O-D-O-O.com.
So we've got a song about our local community and the whole world.
Yeah.
The whole world.
Kind of, yeah.
The East Side is a state of mind.
Yes.
I want to move to a song that is about your musical references. Wanna Be Her. A reference to Bikini Kill, Rebel Girl. Will you speak to how that song and that group is important to you and why you wanted to invoke it on your record?
Yeah, I mean, when we started, I think there were like aspirations of having like a Riot Girl punk band and like being in the canon of Riot Girl, and the truth is that it's like we just weren't meant to make punk music in that way. That wasn't our actual musical lineage, but it is absolutely like our ethos, like lineage. Yeah. And I think to me it's like it's Bikini Kill, and it's also the song Boys Wanna Be Her by Peaches.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The energy of the verse.
Yeah, the energy. Energy of Peaches.
Yeah.
It's funny because that verse for Wanna Be Her is like, I wrote that in like 2017. So I would have been like, yeah, very early 20s.
Oh, it's got some early 20s energy to it.
It has some early 20s
energy. 100%.
Super confident.
Yeah. And then we like figured out the rest of the song with our collaborator, Leland.
Yeah, we were kicking around chorus ideas because she had all the verses. There's like more verses that aren't on the song, I feel like.
Yeah, yes. There are.
And we kind of like picked between them, but... Yeah,
but the early demo
ideas
of that song sounded like a Cake song. Like it was like, I think there was like cowbell.
Yeah.
Cake is in the genealogy of
music
too.
Yeah,
I mean,
cake rocks.
But yeah, Bikini Kill kind of the specific idea of like the sort of like parallel of like trying on the dress and being best friends, like aspect that exists in Rebel Girl.
Mm-hmm.
I think really from a musical standpoint, we were going for like a La Tigra Decepticon thing.
100%.
Which is, you know, it's still in the,
yeah.
It's in the Kathleen Hanna cinematic universe.
Doesn't JD also teach at NYU?
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah.
So there's a Decepticon element. Yeah.
I think it's like a little bit of a nod. We're not like in full like nostalgia era, but I think that it's a little bit of a nod and an homage to like that feeling that we had when we were starting of like our relationships to each other, where it's like, you're just really cool, and I like want to be connected to you in some way, and like I'm confused at what way that is exactly. And the last thing I'll say about it is I think that a lot of these songs we made because of our excitement about like how they would feel to play live.
Totally.
That song is so fun to play live.
Yeah. Well, you all are in a band together, and what's interesting is that, you know, typically we think band, we think guitars, we think drums and bass, and obviously there's a lot of electronics and production and computer work that takes place to make this music the sort of just like amazing
computer,
pristine thing that it is.
We are computer.
But you are computer.
Yeah.
I can see Megan laughing at me.
We are computer.
It's not my vocal stimulant.
I get understand
computer.
Now, yes. Okay.
Joe, you often have an instrument in hand.
Yeah.
What is the importance of having live instruments in electronic productions?
Well, I mean, like, I think it's just a choice. For us, You know what I mean? But I think it was a choice based. Okay, so when we were first taking you back to 2013. So we made some songs, and this is when Katie was like the primary person behind the computer. And like, I remember we played like one of our first shows with at this like art place. And it was Naomi and I with two guitars, Katie with a
MPC.
And we were playing and we were like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Like the show was like, just didn't have the ass like that it needed.
Yeah.
And I think the more that Muna developed, the more we realized like, yes, we like certain drum sounds, like in the actual recordings, mm-hmm. but having real instruments in a room in a live show is the most like cathartic thing like that you can bring. And seeing somebody like actually hit something and feeling that hit like is so important to the live show, which is such a different, I mean, I think now like those two spaces are the most like commingled as they've ever been. But if a song is different on a record, it needs to change for the live show. If it can't be communicated in a way that it's going to feel like you are having some sort of catharsis. But I think at this record, we did the best that we could to bring those two spaces together. But I mean, like, when we're making stuff, we're just trying to make like whatever is right for that song, as opposed to like needing to play something. And I think that took us a long time to do. And Wanna Be Her is honestly a good example of that. There is a simplicity that I think with a lot of these songs, even simplicity for us, mm-hmm. because I know like it's never actually that simple. We're throwing things as often and as much as we can. But for us, it's a simplicity that I think took us a long time to reach in terms of like the musical aspect. And it's still really complex. But for us, that song and East Side Girls are I think, a good example of like us trying not to like oversalt mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I wish we could talk about every single song on this mm-hmm. album. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But people have to go listen to it.
Totally.
So maybe just we could talk, I think, for a long time about Big Stick. There's mm-hmm. a lot happening on this song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I put it on, super cute, so I can make you want anything that I want you to, that I want you to, that I want you to. I can make you want anything that I want you to. I know you like the back of my hand, it's true. I can make you want what I want you to.
But one of the things that really stands out to me about it, aside from some like very strong overt politics,
mm-hmm.
which are powerful, the underlying nature of this song feels a little bit different than some of our other songs here, where I feel like so often one of the things I love about Muna is that you are so good at giving permission to experience pleasure for people, and that joy is available. This song deals with desire and maybe the sort of like flip side of desire.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping that you could talk about how you arrive together at this place of desire as not necessarily the thing that is serving us collectively.
Right.
It's interesting. I think like this, the third record was so much about like this idea of reclamation of desire and pleasure as these like implicitly, I don't know, beneficial
or like benevolent.
Benevolent undertakings. And then yeah, I think that was almost intentional. I think that was a conversation we had, like with this and the record as being like an inversion of that sort of like purity, the idea that like our desire can lead us down paths that are self-destructive, like on Dancing on the Wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Big Stick, like it's some, you know, a conversation more writ large. But
I saw a really cool series of videos that a fan made about like talking about desire or the theme of control, like over our records. And like it was like kind of a breakdown of like control on Dancing on the Wall. And first of all, it's so cute and cool that like people spend that much time. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. I love hearing like if somebody wrote like a paper for like college course or something on like our music. I just think that's so cool. But she said something that I thought was astute and honestly like helpful for explaining it, which was like that a lot of times, like in Muna songs, I'm talking about desire and feeling like a loss of control over desire, or like maybe I'm the one in a dynamic who has the control, or I'm taking back control in like a song like Anything But Me. But like Big Stick is a song that's talking about like larger forces that have control to manipulate our desires. And I think that like in this day and age, it's an experience that everybody with a smartphone has, that like our behavior is being like modified by the technology that we're using. And like our desires can be manipulated in so many ways, like whether it's like the type of media that we're consuming, or like the conversations that we're having with people around us, or like the manipulation of just like financial need. Like, so then you have to like have cognitive dissonance to like repress certain things that you know are wrong and just keep moving forward. The song gets to a place of like, at the end of the line, there's like always like the manipulation of just like hard power. Make you want a nice house with a picket fence. Make you want two kids with inheritance. Make you want a ring light for self-defense. Make you want to give money to the government so the cops can all have military tanks to protect a nice neighborhood just in case. If you speak up too much, like you can be put in jail or worse, you know? And like, actually, my reference for this song was that song "Handlebars" by Flobots. Do you remember this song?
I don't know this song.
Does anybody know this? You do, wait. But you don't.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars.
Yeah.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars. No handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars. No handlebars.
I was a kid when that song got super popular, I think. I don't know exactly when it was, but like, I just remember being like, this was such a cool experience of like, you're kind of drawn into the song by like the catchiness of it and the imagery that he's presenting. And then it kind of feels like the like wool is pulled off of your eyes, where it's like something in the beginning that feels quite innocuous, like is revealed to be like evil. Mm. And I was like, I want to try to do that with Big Stick. But it's also like, last thing I'll say about it is like, this is one of the times where like we write something, and then like when we wrote I Know a Place, that was like, we wrote it like 6 months before the Pulse shooting in Orlando. I wrote imagining like a space of laying down your weapons, but I was like, this is not, I wasn't thinking like this is a literal thing. And it was like really heartbreaking that that became the case. And then it also was really humbling that like our community used that song as, you know, like an anthem to kind of heal in that time. Mm-hmm. And with Big Stick, I will say that like, I wrote that line about, if you have a problem with starving kids in Palestine, then you'll end up in jail and like we'll send you to Louisiana. I wrote that about Mahmoud Khalil. We get kids in Palestine, PTSD, but we'll never fucking ever give them something to eat. And if you got a problem with it, you could end up in jail. Send me to Louisiana, $1 million bail, because I have a big stick, I'm not afraid. But I didn't put anything in the song about like being murdered by the state, because I was like, well, we're not there yet. And then between writing the song and the song coming out, we had two people be murdered in Minneapolis, like by the state, for speaking up against the ICE raid. So it was kind of like this thing of like, it really is this bad, you know, at this point. Like it's the song feels really escalatory, but it's like, it, this is where we are. Mm. And I think it feels so good to be able to like have a song like Big Stick that's so explicit, that like, I think a lot of times, like right now, people feel speechless. Like we just like, what do you fucking say? Like in the face of everything that's going on. So I think it's really nice to have a moment where we can like be saying the same words together and be angry together, like collectively. Mm-hmm. Like that is its own like weird kind of, like it feels good. It honestly does. And hopefully for some people it will be helpful.
This song, which sort of talks so much about the negative impacts of desire, the experience of as a band and as an audience is the inverse of that. Is the freedom from those things which are
right.
oppressing you.
By naming them, being like, I see what's going on. Then you have like 1 second, of course. And then we finish the show and I go back on my phone.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think it also just speaks to like, this is a headier topic, but I'm like, why is there desire on any part of this record? Like, why is there the need to like chase somebody who's not fulfilling you when we live in this world that is unjust? Mm-hmm. I just think like we're all trying to satisfy a need, and this is maybe the one time that we're really poking at like the real thing that's really happening.
Yeah.
It's a powerful moment. Any final advice as I go start a band? What are some things that I should, just any one thing, what can I bring into my collaboration to be a great collaborator?
That's a good question.
Open to anything.
Yeah.
Put on your Craigslist ad. Open to all, open to anything.
Yeah, I think communication above all. Ask questions, check in all the time. Check in all the time and don't be afraid to ask for what you need and ask your collaborator what they need and just talk a ton.
Throw effects on the master.
Totally.
Put an effect on the master.
Totally.
Who knows? It might sound awesome. Yeah.
I appreciate y'all.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
All my drinks. Switched on Pop is produced by Rihanna Cruz, additional production by Sahara Prakash, engineered by Brandon McFarlane, edited by Lissa Soap, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb, video by Nick Rips, music by Zach Tenario and Jossie Adams of Archiris, who we're going to be featuring later this week in their very own special episode. They have a new album out called I Tomorrow. It's a dystopian sci-fi ballet. Really, it's gorgeous. Go check it out and listen to them in our feed in just a few days. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture, which is part of New York Mag. You can subscribe at nymag.com/pod. We'll be back again later this week with I Tomorrow from Archiris and on Tuesday with a regular episode. Until then, thanks for listening.
Dell PCs with Intel Inside are built for the moments you plan and the ones you don't. For the time you forgot your charger at the gate.
Passengers, we are now on our initial ascent.
Or when you're bouncing between projects like a ping pong ball. We build PCs with long-lasting battery life so you're not scrambling for a charger. And built-in intelligence so you can stay focused on whatever you're doing. Dell Technologies. Built for you. Dell.co.uk/Dell PCs.
Support for this show comes from Odoo. Running a business is hard enough, so why make it harder with a dozen different apps that don't talk to each other? Introducing Odoo. It's the only business software you'll ever need. It's an all-in-one, fully integrated platform that makes your work easier. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, and more. And the best part? Odoo replaces multiple expensive platforms for a fraction of the cost. That's why over thousands of businesses have made the switch. So why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's O-D-O-O.com.